Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. Enjoy your lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardy. Hello, Bardy.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man whose hamstring does not snap like a Christmas cracker, it's Nathan A'Clock.
Well, I mean, so far, it's one of the few injuries I haven't had, so fingers crossed on that one, buddy.
Yeah, bad injury news for Spurs. I mean, that is just like the theme of the season at this point, I think. The constant injuries. Like every single time we think we're kind of getting somewhere with the squad getting back, another one goes down, and then another one goes down. Now we've got January where we're going to lose three players, and oh man, it's a lot.
Why do Arsenal players not get injured?
One might ask. I wonder if there's something in the consistency of the coaching for a number of years, the sort of build up of a degree of tolerance to the style of football they play, whereas for Spurs players, it's all new and different and very high intensity.
Yeah. Going from how we played last season under Conte, when we were, you know, keeping a nice steady jog going to explosive football, maybe that's a bit of a harsh transition for some players, but I wouldn't put too much stock into that, you know. Arsenal lost Saliba at the tail end of last season. Their whole season sort of collapsed, right? So, I don't know.
And they lose Zinchenko, and they've lost Ben White now. And they lost, what's he called, the new signing, who was meant to be their new...
Timber,
yeah.
Windy running to the aid of Arteta. We haven't had that in a while.
No, I mean, I'm just stating facts, Bardy.
Stating facts.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
I am very tired. It was very busy, especially with all my social stuff started really in the final week before Christmas. And then the Spurs went to the Everton game, which turned into a long day out. And then family over and just cooking lots of food. And now just faced with a fridge full of bits and pieces. I don't even know where to start or what to eat first, to be honest.
How about you, Nathan?
Yeah, I actually had a pretty easy, quiet, nice one for once, so that was good.
Nice. Yeah, man. Yeah. You took a day off work.
Yeah, well, yeah, just about. I still got that nagging feeling that I should be doing something that I get whenever I haven't done any work. Because like I don't do tons of work every day, but I tend to do like at least something. And so when I don't, there's like a bit of guilt, and I had to convince myself that it was Christmas Day, you know. I had to be, you know, visited by the ghosts of Christmas past, present and future.
I live with that at all times. And my fiance is constantly telling me that I need to rest more. And my New Year's intention, not a resolution, because I don't believe in resolutions, my New Year's intention is to look after myself better and take more rest. Because what tends to happen is I well, essentially I've got two jobs, haven't I, with this? And I just go hell for leather, hell for leather, hell for leather, and I cope and I'm fine and I'm all good. And then I suddenly crash and burn and I get ill. And it happens on a quarterly basis, I would say. And I need to stop that cycle.
There's a drink, you know, that we talk about quite regularly that can help you with that kind of stuff, Windy.
Yeah, I'm on it. Don't worry. It's a daily occurrence in my life.
Genuinely. Part of your routine.
Yeah, it is. More on that later, no doubt. Let's talk about the Everton game. I know we probably don't really want to talk about it too much because I think this was our worst performance of the season. But I'm interested to find out how you guys felt about it and feel about it. The starting 11 was, I guess, predictable because of the absences. Perhaps not. Perhaps we thought Højbjerg might start. But Skip was playing as a six. Emerson Royale was playing as the inverted left back. Other than that, no major surprises.
I was quite happy to see Skip start. I thought it was an interesting move, something a bit different to just plonking in Højbjerg. So I was quite curious to see that, quite happy to see that. And I thought we did okay until Andre Gomez came on, and then his introduction really changed the game into Everton's favour. But I don't think it was that bad. I've seen us play worse this season. I thought we started all right. We hung on towards the end, but that was because we inserted the Bermuda Triangle and things always go weird then. But I thought it was not as bad as that, Windy. I thought it was okay, mate. Braithwaite, by the way. I really like Braithwaite.
Braithwaite. Yeah, he is good.
Braithwaite, sorry. Yeah,
go. He's young, he's English.
He's young, he's English, he's left-footed, he's tall, he's fast. He's like I don't know, he's like a Wilco van der Ven. Go get him.
Mm.
Can play left back too.
Mm.
Nathan, were you at all surprised by the team selection? Did you have good feelings about this game once you saw the team selection?
No. No, I think he pretty much said before the match that it would be Skip starting in that role, or heavily hinted at it, and I had some concerns. What I was expecting was more difficulty at the start and us needing to adapt. Whereas what we got was so they set up in a, what you call this, like a 4-4-1-1, right?
Mm-hmm.
With their number 10, which I think must have been Garner, sort of sitting on Skip, leaving them just Dominic Calvert-Lewin to press the centre backs, and that gave us two ways of getting the ball forward. One was a centre back simply strolled up the pitch and picked out a pass with some good movement ahead of them, or we saw sometimes Porro, sometimes Saar drop in to make a midfield two and just outnumber them in that second line. So for the opening half an hour or so, we found ways to get the ball forward. When we got the ball forward, we had some really nice rotations, some really nice plays to get in behind, and played really good football. And it was the remaining 70 minutes that were the problem period.
I kind of disagree with Bardi in that I felt like we got a bit better after the Højbjerg sub.
I said Everton got better when they put Gomez.
I think you made a point about the Bermuda Triangle. But I actually thought it was fine. In a pod recently, I said that Lo Celso was terrible off the bench, and that he should only start and not come on, basically. And I'd like to retract that, because I thought he actually was pretty good when he came on and he did some really useful stuff for us. I thought Skip really struggled. I think Skip is best suited to the six role of any in the Ange ball, but I think his lack of press resistance was a problem, and also his lack of athleticism in the press was a problem. There were a couple of things I noticed. I mean, the two sort of the key things that stay with me from the game in relation to Skip were him losing the ball and them countering on us, which, you know, can happen to anyone and will happen to all of our number sixes, but it was a really unfortunate moment for him. And then later in the game, him unsure whether to step out or drop back, so stepping out but doing so with his sort of limited mobility, and then just getting passed around for like 30 seconds straight chasing the ball like a headless chicken. And I just thought, God, we really miss Bissouma. And Bissouma's been getting a lot of criticism recently. And I think some of it justified, because I do think his performance levels have dropped. But I think this game showed that Bissouma, even at this level, you know, where he's not at the best he was at the start of the season, is significantly better at six than Skip. And maybe after a few games, Skip will grow into it a little. But my feelings are that Skip is a perfectly competent player, but not suited to Ange Ball. I think it's all happening too fast for him to deal with. When I think back to his loan at Norwich, playing as number six and doing really well and playing a huge number of passes, there wasn't a lot of pressure on him a lot of the time. It was in the Championship where at that point there wasn't a huge amount of high pressing, and the number six in Norwich's possession heavy side saw a lot of the ball and saw a lot of the ball without too much pressure. So he was able just to kind of pick it up off the centre backs and puncture passes through the midfield and do that really effectively. And I still think he could do that really effectively for some Premier League teams. You know, I look at Harrison Reed at Fulham and I think that could easily be Oliver Skip. He could easily play central midfield for Fulham to the same level that Harrison Reed does. But I don't think he's it for Ange Ball. I don't think he can quite cope with the pace of what's being required of him, the press resistance of what's being required of him. And I'm looking forward to this experiment being over, if I'm honest.
I think you've been a little bit harsh on Skip. I think he's not as good as Bissouma, which is obvious he's not. But I think he did all right. I think he did. I actually think he did better than you're giving him credit for. His passing was fairly accurate. He did carry the ball quite a bit. He did offer us bits and pieces, made some tackles, moved around, switched the ball occasionally. I thought he was all right. I don't think he was the problem. There just wasn't much coming from other areas of the team, and we missed Udogie, and
yeah.
That was
it. We really missed Udogie.
That the midfield just wasn't working. Emerson stepping inside, and I think that was more of a problem area than Skip. I think Skip did fine. He's not gonna be a solution at six, but for this game, I thought it was fine.
Well, I think you could probably get away with Skip at six if you've got Porro and Udogie fit. But yeah. I don't think you could get away with Skip at six with Emerson Royale as the other kind of build-up player in midfield. I think that was a real struggle for the pair of them. Ben Stock says, I agree with everything you've been saying about Skip. However, do you think there could be a place in the squad for him, if he finds his form, as the last 20-minute firefighting central midfielder when closing out a game in the early season Højbjerg mould? He could be an important part of the squad building too, given it would be difficult to replace him as a club-trained player. Nathan, do you see a future for Skip in Ange's squad?
Well, I think he's been doing the come off the bench things and not really giving us what we've been looking for there. I think, to sort of basically repeat the point you've already made, Wendy, like going into the game, I was worried about Skip in possession, where he was actually fine in that role, but it was the out of position stuff, like the, and definitely highlights just how much we ask of Bissouma week after week, times when he's just got to try and suppress a counterattack with like three people in midfield on his own. And it's not really a criticism of Skip to say that like he struggled with that, because he should struggle with that. And it's kind of absurd that Bissouma does okay, although he's also picked up a couple of reds and several yellows in the process, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, highlights how much I think we ask of our number six and what a difficult role that is. It's fair to say. For me, I think Skip's best role is the number eight, but he's still not in my long-term view for the squad.
Fair. Bardi, how are you feeling about your Richarlison bet with Nathan right now?
I think I'll probably lose this bet. I think it's been a while since I lost a bet, but I think I'm going to lose this one. But I don't mind. He scored a good goal. I don't think he was involved as perhaps he would have liked, but it was a nice finish. And I think Johnson had a similar opportunity in the first half as well that he missed, that he fluffed. So, he's becoming a bit more clinical. It's good. Keep crossing the ball. Cross more, Tottenham.
Yeah, I actually thought that this was maybe Richarlison's worst game for Spurs.
Yeah, other than the goal, he was really, he was broken groin, Richarlison, not running boy.
Pre-dick injury.
Yeah.
They reattached his massive steel balls and it was dragging him down.
But it was a really nice, composed finish. That was great.
True.
I think whoever won the toss, Everton must have won the toss, because they seem like the kind of people who make us play the wrong way for the first half. I honestly believe that has an impact. I know it's exactly the same as there's no actual real life pitch tilt where the pitch tilts. But I think it did impact us not playing towards the Park Lane for the second half.
Something about the routine of it all, isn't it?
I think so.
I thought Richarlison was poor and quite sloppy, but I thought he was not helped by the fact that Son had probably his worst game of the season, looking really kind of weary and slow and getting frustrated quite a lot.
So since Son skinned up Kieran Trippier for free all game against Newcastle, he has gone, I think I've got this right, 5 for 14 on dribbles in the next two games. So he's trying to do that role. He's trying to get around his player, but he's doing it around a third of the time, which is pretty weak.
He can get around Nathan Patterson.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
who's not bad, by the way. I think Patterson's a pretty good player, sure. But yeah, it just kind of shows where Trippier's at, I think, at this stage in his career.
Yeah,
I mean, Everton are real kind of much of a muchness. That Onana is huge, though. That guy just towers over everybody. But yeah, Everton just a much of a muchness. I mean, Sean Dyche was quite the bouncy character along the touchline, claiming everything, him and all his assistants. But yeah, they're not great to watch. But yeah, Jared Brantwaite, he's unbelievable. He's got those legs that motor, and I really like that.
You referenced Andre Gomes, Bardi. I did something bad. when he came on, I said in the Discord after a few minutes, "Oh, he's such a nothing player. He doesn't do anything." Like, and I still believe that to be true. But he was really good. He was really creative and really effective.
He did have his legs obliterated into biscuit crumbs by Son. You need some time.
Nasty monster, human Son.
Yeah.
Who cruelly ended Andre Gomes' career deliberately as a joke. So we go two goals up and Everton start pressing higher up the pitch, right? Because they kind of have to at this stage because they're two goals down. A couple of minutes later, Andre Gomes comes on and Idrissa Kanigiri goes off. Andre Gomes, he's sort of like, and I appreciate that he's getting on in his years now, but he's sort of like a kind of second or third rate Moussa Dembele in his ability to glue the ball to himself. And so, because Everton were pressing us higher, we played into that and baited them forwards and looked to bring them onto us and then play fast through the lines. And we did have, throughout the remainder of the entire game, like a few threatening counterattacks, several threatening counterattacks, but we just couldn't quite turn really any of them into good chances. All of our counterattacks just seemed to peter out. And when I say counterattacks, I mean both genuine actual turning the ball over in our own half or their half, wherever, and also artificial counterattacks where we've baited them forward with possession in and around our own box. But yeah, they did a great job of containing our counterattacks for the entire rest of the game. But because it became quite a bit more transitional, that really suited Andre Gomes, who's not a creative player, can't pick out a pass, but can control the ball incredibly well. So yeah, I think in a way that forced substitution kind of helps them quite a bit, as Gomes has been a frustrating player to watch sometimes. Once it became this athletic, physical game, we just seemed to wane more and more and more. And definitely, and we've spoken before, like the pattern of the game has been, pattern of the games we've had this season has been a lot of the times us dominating for 60 minutes, gassing out and having a bit of a fright in the closing half an hour of the game. This time it seemed to be half an hour of good football and 60 minutes of fatigue, which I guess makes some sense when you're talking about, like, you know, Skip, who's not been starting games and therefore hasn't built up that highest level of match fitness, perhaps. Possibly also true of Emerson Royale, although he put up 5 out of 5 tackles, 8 interceptions, 7 loose ball recoveries, 89% pass success. So statistically,
he had a
very strong game.
He was playing the most literal inverted fullback you've ever seen in life. He literally played a fullback role in central midfield. So everything you'd expect him to do in the byline, he did there without any of the kind of central midfield. It was a bizarre performance from him.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually. Yeah. He played fullback when not in the fullback position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, I thought he was busy, but like Nathan says, I think he was a struggle, to be honest. I think he really hampered our ball progression.
I mean, again, it's like with the Skip one, right? We're comparing him to a doggy who's been a marvel. So, you know.
But it is a really big drop-off, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think that, with some players coming in who weren't starters, we gassed out even earlier as Everton upped their intensity. And, it's not the case that we couldn't get the ball to our forwards, you know, whilst drawing Everton's press out. It's when we did, the ball just wouldn't stick to them. And obviously half of that is the quality of the delivery, timing and the weight of the ball and stuff like that. Sometimes the pass was definitely forced into a forward who had a defender on their back. And sometimes it's just Son and Johnson struggled to control the ball a bit, you know? So it's hard to do too much of an analysis in terms of like there being really anything to take away from this tactically, because like playing that way against, you know, Bournemouth was incredible. Yeah, we drew them out and played through them again and again and again, played some incredible football. But obviously here you're talking about like Davies is in place of Van de Ven, Skip is in place of Bissouma. Halfway through the game, Eric Dier is in place of Christian Romero. And so you've just got, like, in my opinion, none of those players had like an especially bad game. Maybe Dier, who actually previously I've defended his ball playing. But collectively, that's a significant drop off in their ability to handle being under pressure. And like, again, none of them lost the ball a lot, but between them, they managed to lose the ball collectively. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Makes sense. So you mentioned Eric Dier. Inexplicably, he's back in the team. And in light of the Romero news, he might be in the team some more. So Postecoglou says ahead of the next game against Brighton that Romero is due to be out for 4 to 5 weeks with a hamstring strain, which is terrible news, obviously. Van de Ven might be back by mid-January, but Postecoglou was not wanting to assess that until he's seen him in training. With Romero out, Bardi, do you think Dier starts alongside Davis, as happened against Wolves, or do you think Emerson Royale will play centre-back?
I think we've got to bring Emerson Royale back in. Dier is he's a mess on the ball, he's a mess off the ball, he's a mess the whole way. There's bits there where they were running towards him and he was just full on sprinting backwards towards his own area before he decided to commit. It's just a totally different defender from Romero. And he's just not suited, and it's not good. He made one block, but he only made that block after he'd run alongside the guy for 25 yards. He needs, he's just not good enough in this system. He needs to go to a low block team soon. So play Emerson, put the fullback in centre back,
or maybe even go to Ashley Phillips now. He's back fit. That would be a hell of a big ask, I think. Mm. But you never know. If it's Joel Houghton,
there was a moment in the game where I thought something was going on with the crowd. I don't know if you guys saw it. I think it was towards the 80th minute or so. All the Everton players went steaming over to the sidelines. Did you see that? They didn't pick up on TV. So all the Everton players come steaming over to the side which I'm on. So I sit in the corner, the side where the dugouts are. And there's this geezer. He's leaning over the advertising hoardings, waving his fist, shouting at the Everton players. And the Everton players have reacted. And you don't normally see football players react to individuals in the crowd. And I've gone to the guy next to me. Look at this. They're going to start fighting with a member of the crowd. And then if we look closely, it was Bentancur. Bentancur was leaning over, giving it the old shaking of the fist towards all the Everton players. And alongside it was all the Spurs players. I saw later on the TV, they were all sat there watching. But yeah, Bentancur was properly pumping his fist from the side of the from the side and giving it. So that was nice to see that he's fully coised.
I think I mentioned before that at the Villa game, he was up remonstrating with the fourth officials. He's obviously just a passionate watcher, definitely a better player than watcher.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a really bad passenger in a car. I prefer to be behind the wheel. I really struggle when I'm next to the driver. That's Bentancur. He can't watch.
Because I was looking at him and then I looked closely. I could see there was the beard. He was wearing the beanie. And I was just like, holy shit, that's Bentancur giving it some. So it was nice to see.
Nice. Anything else you'd like to say about the Nathan game? So the Everton game? The Nathan game sounds
all
fun.
All games are Nathan games, in my opinion. another situation with two balls on the pitch, Bardi. What's going on at the stadium?
I quite like it when they do it this way. And it also...
Honestly, I hate it so much.
But it's all right when they're attacking. But I did do a Tales of the Lane, but I was seriously hungover. My voice was really croaky. Tales of the Lane is something that I do for the patrons. It's like 4 or 5 minute pods of something funny that I saw. And the Bentancourt story was one of those tales. The other tale was this two ball thing, because it popped onto the pitch and all it kicked off, and then the Park Lane started singing two balls and you still can't score, which as someone who likes a strange chant or a little kind of impromptu chant, it did make me laugh.
I think it's the third time this season that our fans have held a ball back and then thrown it on during a critical moment.
No, but the ones that that's happened in the Park Lane is just because someone's had a few too many neck oils and just mistimed when to throw it. This time it seemed a bit more malicious that it was done tactically.
Mm-hmm. So there's going to be, I'm sure there'll be some sort of crackdown on that, that the stewards will have to start walking across and grabbing the balls, won't they? Because it's, you can't have that when a team's attacking, another ball gets thrown onto the pitch.
How are you going to crack down on this, Windy? You're going to employ a load of goalkeepers as ball boys to try and catch it?
I think they're going to have to radio to the nearest steward and say, go and get the ball. Go and get the ball back.
But in the crowd?
Yeah.
But then they sit, you go up and someone just throws it, someone else punches it. You can't manage it. It's just one of those things. Oh, yeah.
It's weird. It's weird that it's happened this year, isn't it?
Yeah, quite funny though when it happens to someone else.
It has become a thing, definitely.
Hello, I'm a former Tottenham player and I've played under some of the best managers in Brian Clough, Sir Alex Ferguson and Harry Redknapp. I love scoring goals and I've won the Premier League Golden Boot in my career. Who am I?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are you Teddy Sheringham?
I am indeed Teddy Sheringham. Well done, Windy. I suspected you might get this one.
One of my absolute favourite ever players. I loved watching Teddy play for Spurs. A little before your time, Nathan?
I was trying to work out how Dimitar Berbatov could possibly have played under Clough.
Do you remember what year did Teddy win the Golden Boot, Windy?
95?
No, very first season of the Premier League. He scored 22 goals for Spurs and one for Forest. He also scored, for those of you that want a little bit of trivia, he scored the first ever goal shown on Sky. So,
nice.
But not the first ever Premier League goal. Do you know who that was?
Les Ferdinand?
No.
It was before that.
Yeah. Brian Dean.
Brian Dean. Yes. Brian Dean. I remember seeing that goal now. Yeah. Brian Dean. Yeah. He was a lamppost of a player.
Could smack him in, though.
He could smack him in.
If you're a long-time listener, you might know I'm a huge supporter of AG1. It's part of my routine. It's something I can rely on and trust. It's predictable. Not in the way that the Bermuda Triangle of Davies, Dyer and Højbjerg is predictable in its ability to cause chaos, but solid and dependable in the way it supports my gut health, sleep and nutrition, things which are very important to me. The Bermuda Triangle induces sleepless nights in the very best of us, but I rely on my AG1 to help me through these tough periods. I know that AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists behind it, not a static centre mid and an oil tanker of a centre back. Have faith in AG1 to get you through the winter months and pray that the Bermuda Triangle can manage itself half as good.
AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/extrainch. That's drinkag1.com/extrainch. Check it out. The sound quality of this episode may be a bit lower than what you've been used to, so apologies if that is the case. I've just noticed that my recording is not working properly, so we might have to use our backup. But Nathan will try and work his magic and do the best he can with that. We're going to talk transfers because the January window is about to open, and I don't know about you guys, but I feel really good about it because I think Spurs' recruitment has really become pretty solid over the last couple of seasons. And, you know, I think the players we've been linked with are all players we can be excited about. And, I think there's a lot of promise here.
It's all well and good being excited and having promise, but it kind of needs to happen pretty quick.
Like, it does.
There's no point. We signed Porro, who's turned into an incredible, one of our best players, but he arrived right at the end of January, which was no use to anybody. So Todibo and these kind of guys, Gallagher, whoever you want to get, even though I'm not a huge Gallagher fan, if you want to get them, then that's great. But let's try and get this done early because we need these players in. Because if we're in top four now, and it's weird that we had that kind of weird, the bad few weeks. Had we been a little bit better, picked up a few points here and there, we'd be right in the mix for top of the table. So I think we need to get the business done as soon as possible.
Mm. I think the suggestion is that Postecoglou is desperate for the centre-back to be done as early as possible. There was a quote from his press conference today on whether it should be a right or left-sided centre-back. And he said, interestingly, I don't put as much stock into a left-sided or right-sided centre-back scenario. We just need another player in that position who can provide some more depth for us and the ability to change it up. It won't matter if it's left-sided or right-sided. It is more the profile and characteristics. We didn't go looking for a left-sided centre-back at the start of the year. It just happened that Mickey was the perfect centre-back. Even if we had another left-sided one, I still would have signed him. It's about looking at the right profile, the right characteristics, and seeing what's available, then going from there. And I think that is very encouraging, particularly in relation to Todibo, who Nathan did a video on last week.
Yeah. I did a live stream. We watched the game. We watched Nice vs Monaco, and we paid Todibo special attention, but we watched the game, most of the game generally as well. And I did it live on Discord, so I fielded some questions as I went along. And we tried to explore whether he could play the passive role. And I felt quite like we got to a pretty good place with that within the video. Obviously, the sample's one game. And we did some talking to statistics and stuff. I'm quite happy with it. Obviously, it's a live stream form rather than like a really polished type video where it's like, here's everything compressed into 20 minutes. So I'm interested in feedback because I started to consume live stream content now. So I feel less bad about putting out live stream content, basically. So yeah, definitely interesting feedback for that. But basically, Todibo was my number one pick coming up to January. And it seems like maybe he's Spurs' number one pick as well. Postecoglou's quotes. I am not entirely convinced that he is being honest. I think that he might be saying what is smart for him to say rather than what he genuinely believes. But
what's your rationale for that?
We've seen very little in the way of right foot is on the left and left foot is in the right so far. Whereas if you announce to the market, we're looking for a right footer, you're shortening your market, right? And you're announcing that you're only interested in, you know, half the centre backs out there, and you can't say, oh, well, we're also looking at this guy because he's left footed or whatever. So, and then also Todibo is someone who maybe is going to be an exception and can play not so much left and right, but can play aggressive and passive, I think. So he would be someone who can come in and do both and also have the technical quality to play on his opposite side. Fine. Although Romero can do that too, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Van de Ven could probably do that too. Although it's rare to see a left footer on the right. So I think he's sort of distracting a little with his answer there. It's my suspicion.
Interesting. Bardi, you mentioned that you don't like Gallagher too much. What's the reason for that?
I'm just not a huge fan. I haven't seen any. He's just a box to box guy. Just gets up and down.
Yeah.
Don't like the cut of his chin.
I think he's more than that. I think he when he was on loan at Crystal Palace, he was a really, really impressive arriver in the box and at the edge of the box and scored quite a few goals in that season.
Yeah.
But I think his role under Pochettino at Chelsea has really evolved and changed from that, and he's doing a lot more sitting, I suppose, for want of a better word.
How's Chelsea been doing?
Probably their best player this season, and he's there. He's currently captaining them. The only reason that they are willing to let him go, supposedly, is, well, he's got 18 months left in his contract, which works against them, and also they have these FFP problems. So if they could sell him for between 45 and 50 million, as suggested by some of the reporting recently, I think it was Ben Jacobs has written that, they might want to do business. And my view is, if we can tie up a deal for Højbjerg with Juventus, a loan with an obligation to buy, which has been reported, and let's say we get 25 million for Højbjerg, then another 20 million on top for Gallagher for a homegrown player, I think that's pretty good business, to be honest. And I think Gallagher is someone who could potentially cover all three midfield roles. I'm not saying he'd cover them all to the same level of effectiveness, but I think he offers goals from midfield. I think he'd be really good at the eight. He's a good presser. I think he'd be pretty good as a six. Now I've seen him more there. I've seen him sort of turn out trouble plenty this season for Chelsea and look really good doing it. He's not hugely creative, so the 10 would be more of a struggle, I think. But he's a good footballer. He's a good all-round footballer, and I do like him a lot. I like the profile fit. I like the versatility fit, and I like the fact that he's another homegrown player. Nathan, are you I know you weren't excited about Gallagher. Are you warming to the idea?
I think he's a very good player. I just have some concerns over tactical fit. With Bentancur coming back, hopefully at some point, you know, for an extra run of games, I feel like we have that profile in the squad. Obviously Gallagher's younger, English, but then like we've got Sarr, so I don't know. I don't like Gallagher playing the six. I don't like Gallagher playing the number 10. I only see him as number 8, and for me, we've got good quality depth there despite Bentancur's injury. The thing is that, like, yeah, Gallagher is really, truly excellent at arriving in the box, and he's an outstanding finisher from what we've seen so far as well. And it's fair to say that we've been lacking that in what we put out there. But then, like, again, I think that's a good strength of Bentancur as well. Like last season, he was absolutely bagging them until he got injured, right? So, I don't know, like, again, like, he's definitely a good player. He could definitely play that role. I just think, like, we need a number six. Maybe, again, you said before, move Bentancur into being the backup number six, and then you need another eight. Sure, I get that. I just, I don't want to help Chelsea out if they're in financial trouble, and I don't see Gallagher playing any other role but one. But he's a good young English player, and it would upset Pochettino very much, apparently, so... So,
and it means Højbjerg goes the other way. I wasn't keen on it, but I think if that's what the kind of outcome of it, then let's do it, get it done. That's another one on the list.
One bit of business we know is happening is that Dane Scarlett is returning from his loan at Ipswich, who I guess it turns out it's been a really poor loan. I don't think it was obviously a bad loan. I think because Ipswich have been so outstanding this season that he's really struggled to find a place in the team. They've kind of gone for more known quantities, and they've been very consistent with their starting 11. So he struggled to break in. I don't know. What do you think? Whether Dane Scarlett will get any first team minutes? He's a pretty good profile fit for a Postecoglou 9, but if he's not getting minutes for Ipswich, is he likely to get minutes for Spurs?
No.
Yeah, he'll be a bench option at best, I suspect.
The thing is, he's a good profile fit for a Postecoglou number 9. Like, he's a poacher. He can kind of get him behind a little bit. He's put on some muscle weight, which will help with his explosivity and his ability to cope with the physical league. I don't think it's really... I don't think it's like an indictment of him that he wasn't getting minutes at Ipswich. It's just that their setup is working well without him, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that if he's not going to play first team football, then he might as well be training with the first team. And that's the benefit that we're getting out of drawing him back, is that he gets to train with the first team. I doubt he'll get many minutes. Be cool if he does. I guess he's a better tactical fit than Valise, but then in that, Valise is offering us an alternative. But then Valise comes on so late in the game, he gets one touch. So I don't know.
I would like to have seen Valise get get inserted against Everton a bit. Well, he didn't get on at all, but I would like to see him play a little bit. I'm not sure what Dane Scarlett's going to offer us. He'll maybe get minutes if we get through the Burnley game and then we get someone rubbish in the next round. Otherwise, I don't think we'll see him. But he did play pre-season, didn't he? He came off a cane, scored a goal, a good goal. So maybe, you never know. Especially with Sun going away as well in January.
Mm-hmm. We're being linked with several other players, including some attacking players. So Rooney Bargy, the suggestion is that we'd like to sign him, and we'd like to do it now rather than wait until the summer. He is represented by CAA Base, who we know have represented many a Spurs transfer target in the past. Are you a fan, Nathan?
I am a fan. He's definitely like an exciting young talent. But again, I'm confused by his fit for the role. So he plays...
He
plays inside right, I think. With a probably a right back who goes around the outside of him quite a bit. And so, kind of like Gallagher, his main role is to arrive in the box for shots. And he's been an outstanding statistical finisher. And he's really good with his movement. I don't know. I guess if you look at the Gallagher links and you look at the Rooney Bargy links and the suggestion that it's Postecoglou in both cases who's perhaps pushing both of them is that he feels that there's a missing profile in the squad as a secondary forward, as someone who's really good at arriving in the box well. Whereas I see the greater concern being our ability to sustainably provide into the box. And what happens next is a secondary problem, right?
Mm.
So I guess if that's what's happening, that's where I'm seeing the game differently to Ange. I don't think Bargy is a great fit for playing on the right touchline. He doesn't have the volume of dribbles. I mean, he doesn't have the volume of minutes because he's not actually a starter for Copenhagen most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're talking about basically a child here, so that's fine. He's definitely like an up-and-coming, exciting talent. And of course, when, you know, Paratici is your shadow director of football, he's always just going to be looking for exciting young players regardless of how they fit tactically, because you can return on their value and mold them as you like and work the rest out later.
Wasn't Paratici spotted at Spurs on the weekend?
Yep.
Was that you who retweeted something on that, Nathan?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I hadn't realised that. Okay. So he's still in the mix.
Yep.
Mm.
I'm excited about Rooney Bargy. Just because
the name,
and also because of the possibility of you know, the titles that we could do, the stuff we could do, the puns. I'm really looking forward to Bargy joining us.
Another forward we're being linked to is Santiago Jimenez, who is more of an Arsenal striker, isn't he, Nathan?
Yeah. So this is an interesting. So he plays for Feyenoord. So I've watched him quite a bit. And if you go back and watch my video on Arne Slot, which is one that instantly aged terribly, I talk about him being like the blunt instrument at the end of everything that Feyenoord do. He profiles a bit like Valise, right? He's a battering ram. He's a big, tall beanpost. And so much of Feyenoord's football is creating a chance for a winger to cross the ball in from out wide that he absolutely bagged goals last season. I went, that's pretty good, but also I reckon anyone who's like pushing 7 foot and stood in the middle for a team who have excellent wingers who cross the ball all game is going to get quite a few goals. But this season he's scoring at greater than a rate of a goal a game, which is like absurd.
Wow.
Right, so even with like him playing in the absolute perfect circumstances for him, which is like, you know, being a huge big guy playing in a league of children defenders. And also,
I thought he was like 5'10 or 5'11 or something.
I'm looking this
Am
up.
Am I looking at the wrong player?
Embarrass myself. Either he's very tall or he's got an incredible leap on him. Mm. Maybe he's just got an outstanding leap.
I could easily be thinking of the wrong player.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying he's what's 1.8, like 5'10? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, it's just a bit shorter than me.
Damn, my man can leap.
Jump.
He's high
jumper.
When he meets the ball. He's tall in the air. You know what I mean? that's how I'm rephrasing this.
Okay.
The same thing when I, by the way, when I watched, when I scouted even Tony way back at Peterborough, I reported that he was tall then and he wasn't tall again. He's tall in the air, right? So he's got Ivan Tony vibes.
Nice. I skipped over our other centre-back target, Radu Dragushin, who looks like Khal Drogo, and he has a very weird profile for a centre-back, but it definitely seems like Spurs are keen. Bardi, have you seen much of him for... Is it Genoa he plays for?
Genoa, no, nothing. Isn't he signing a new contract? That's what my ITK is telling me.
Okay.
That's what.
So
his...
are we being used in contract negotiations again?
Yeah, maybe.
Probably.
Maybe.
He's still a young boy, you know. If I was him, do one more season there. Take the money and then go for big bucks.
So just like Van de Ven, just like Todibo, Dragušin is an athletic freak. He plays the aggressive role. He mainly plays right side of a two or a three, occasionally central. But he, how do I phrase this? He's springy. Everything he does like explosively. He's got an incredible leap on him. He's fast on the turn, explosively fast, extremely aggressive.
Sounds like he's got that dog in him.
Yeah, he's all dog. He's dog all the way head to toe. He's made entirely out of dog.
He's Labrador.
I don't know whether he can play football especially well though. It's hard to tell. So
he might burst the ball every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the thing, it's like he absolutely throws himself into every tackle, every challenge, every header. He also throws himself into every touch of the ball, right? Which is to just most of the time, the first pass will be a gentle pass to a centre back next to him. And then his centre back will pass the ball back to him, baiting the opposition forward to the press. And then it's time to smash the ball as close to the sun as you can possibly get it. Right, that's the type of football that Genoa play. And I went to the effort of finding some Serie B matches from last season, because last season, in their promotion season, Genoa had the highest possession percentage of the league. So surely we would get a good look at what Dragušin looks like in a team who dominate the ball. Well, how they dominate the ball is they smash the ball to the sun, and when it comes back down, they're better at fighting for it, and then they're in the final third, which is basically how Everton played against us, right? So it's quite hard to get a read on Dragušin's ability to play football, but the athletic profile, there can be no doubt over.
Nice. Ange backs himself to coach some passing ability.
The thing, the most, in my opinion, the most important tool a centre-back can have to be good on the ball is agile hips.
Mm.
Right? Van de Ven is not a creative passer. He's not a progressive passer. His technique is good. His first touch is definitely good. But the main thing that makes him excellent in our system is his comfort on the ball. And that comes from his agility in his hips. Dragušin absolutely has the agility. He just might also have like hiking boots on, you know.
He does look like that he could just pick up the Argentine tango and just go with it. He does have that look about him. But yeah, I'm gonna keep an eye on the hips, because for sure Dyer has no hips. That man, he could never like marry someone from South America, because he just disgrace himself at weddings. But yeah, okay, gonna look at people's hips from now on.
So two more bits of transfer news in our roundup. Firstly, a terrible tabloid in the UK whose name I won't mention, reporting that we want to sign Arthur Vermeeren and loan him back to Royal Antwerp until the end of the season, which is what we did with Udogie, if you remember, and it's what Brighton tend to do quite a bit with their young signings. It seems to be a thing now. Do we know much about Vermeeren, Nathan?
Yeah, he's really good. I talked about him the other week. He stood out last season as having like a really strong defensive statistical profile, as just an outstanding ball winner. And there was quite a bit of hype about him in sort of scouting circles, and I didn't get it very much. And then like he's made a huge, huge leap this season in his ball playing game. So things with him are still kind of a little scrappy, I guess, but the technical quality is coming on leaps and bounds game by game, basically. So he's sort of an exciting player. And we also similarly got links, possibly also by the same news source, to Adam Wharton. So those are like my two guys that I wanted us to pick for number six, and also to Debo as my number one centre-back target. Like, people have been making the joke about like Spurs Nicomai ideas for a while, and it's not really been that, you know, it's been a stretch. But now I really feel like, I don't actually think that Spurs are, you know, following me on Twitter. What I'm saying is like...
They're subbing to our Patreon.
No.
They're using the same methods to identify their targets.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I think. And it's also like... do I need to change like what I'm doing? Is it like, is it still, I don't know. I'm sort of reflecting
you're ahead of the game in terms of, you know, you tell us the players you like, and then maybe Spurs will like them too.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Or maybe they already like them, but we just don't know about it yet.
Yeah.
I get a bit nervous about signing players from Belgium because they look great in Belgium. I'm going to butcher his name, Charles de Ketelare, who looked big in Belgium, then went to Milan, did nothing. But he's come back to life at Atalanta.
Yeah, same as Kamaka, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of players do come back to life there, then Atalanta just flips them for a load of money. like the big number nine at United. So maybe I still get nervous. Same with, who was the guy we were gonna sign in the summer, the striker? Gift Orban. So I do get nervous about players from Belgium. But if he looks good, then why not? 25 million is a lot of money, though.
Yeah, for a player who's not yet 19, has only played in the Belgian league, it's a fair old chunk of cash. Although I imagine it will be on a long-term contract and probably spread out along the contract. Final bit of news in the roundup is that Ivan Perisic is still wanted by Hajduk Split, as we found out in the summer. And I think had he not got injured, he got injured before the transfer deadline, if I recall, and I think there was a chance he would have moved. I suspect if he gets fit enough to go in January, he'll go. So I think we can almost discount him from the squad in that sense. So no real surprise with that. Like, he's, you know, in the twilight of his career, going back to Croatia, to the club he started at, would seem to make a lot of sense, I think. I can't imagine we'll get a fee for him, but it'll be more wages off the books. So I imagine he's on a fair old wedge. So no bad thing at all. By the time we record next, it's possible we might have made a signing. You never know.
So 2024 is going to be the year of extreme positivity from Windy. I'm looking forward to it.
Are you sceptical about our ability to sign players early, Bardi?
Yeah, I've been around the block, and as much as we think Tottenham's changed, I don't know if we've changed that much.
Fair.
The thing is, right, and I know that, like, as Spurs fans, we essentially do this every single window, and I definitely did this last January under Conte, because we needed to make drastic changes or sack him, and we didn't do either. The title race is wide open, right?
Yeah.
It's absolutely there for the taking. If, and I'm not saying this is likely, and I'm not even saying this is financially responsible, but if we really went for it in January, if we went for like 3 or 4 first 11 quality players, we could put ourselves in such a strong position to contend for the title this season. Because, like, obviously the plan, you know, the plan was to be doing that next season, the season after, if things went well. But it's wide open right now, and I don't want to watch Arsenal win the league.
No, man, absolutely not.
We can do it. We have the coach. We have the star talent. We just need the quality of depth, and we're there. I don't know, man. Like, it's ripe for the plucking, you know. And again, as a fan, I'm always going to be like, oh, you know what we should do now? We should spend all of our money, because that's exciting and fun. but the, like, it's the potential reward is there, you know.
I'm with you. Do we do a question, or do we leave it there?
Let's have one more.
Okay. Len DeMano says to us, I wonder what player names you would get on shirts. Who are your top three? I'm personally still struggling to include Madison due to his past comments about Bale, but I'm softening my stance. Bardi, who are your favourite? Who are your favourite Spurs players, or the names you'd get on the back of a shirt right now?
Well, I've never had a name on the back of my shirt. I don't tend to buy Tottenham kits. I haven't bought one since the seatbelt one, which I got the season after we changed, because it was on special offer. But I have a real love-hate relationship with a lot of our players, as you may have noticed over the years, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure I would ever commit myself to one of our players, but I think I would go for numbers. So I like the number seven, and Son is such a nice name to have, such a good person. So I would maybe go for the number seven, which would be Son. I also really like the number 14, which is Perisic, so that doesn't really suit. I also really like the number 18, and I would never put Lo Celso on my back. I also, my lucky number is 15, which has been on Eric Dier's back for way too many years. So I think I'd go for Son, and then, I don't know, something random like Brian Hill, number 11. And then something, then maybe 30 with Bentancur, just because I can't put any of the others on my back.
I think what you should do, Bardi, is just like get a bunch of Velcro letters and numbers and then keep them at the top of your hill. So when you're having a good time with a player, you run up your little hill and you slap some Velcro on.
Yeah.
And then when you fall out with them, you can just take it off and you've still got your Spurs shirt.
There must be in the future a way, Tottenham will design a way that you could just change people's numbers. But I think probably seven, Son. When my sister decided to commit to supporting Spurs, I got her like a match top with, I put Son on the back for her, which she was very happy with. So yeah, seven, Son. Seven, Son.
Nice. Nathan, any preferences?
Yeah, I reckon I'm going to be one of those dickheads who gets a custom for a player that we haven't yet signed that I want us to sign. I'll get Nico Williams or Todibo.
Oh God, awful, horrendous.
With an already taken number as well to make it extra bad.
No, disgusting, horrendous.
What are you going to get, Windy? 69, lads.
No, Son is so adorable, isn't he? It's hard to look past him, but I'm going to look past him. I would get Pedro Porro because I absolutely love him. He's my fave, my boy. And then my second choice would be Kulusevski. A pricey name to get, bit of a cult hero, I think. And my third would be Udogi because I think he is soon to be a massive favourite. Really enjoying watching him develop at Spurs.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Bardi, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Trayton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs. Thank you.